Welcome to the deep dive. Look at the frost creeping across a cold winter window pane. And then picture the massive, invincible metal teeth of an industrial rock crusher.
Right, chewing through solid granite.
Exactly. You're actually looking at the exact same hidden microscopic phenomenon.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. So today, our mission is to unpack this highly detailed scientific text by HKDH Padacia. It's called Dendritic Solidification.
And it is a phenomenal text.
Yeah. We are exploring the microscopic, basically tree-like structures that literally dictate the physical world around you. From the ice on your windshield to, you know, the structural integrity of a skyscraper.
And it really challenges us to look closely at the boundary where a phase change actually happens, like when a material undergoes solidification.
Right, like a liquid cooling down or changing due to pressure.
Exactly. When that happens, a nucleation front, an interface between the solid and the liquid, advances through the material.
And our basic intuition tells us that this front should move as a flat, uniform wall.
But thermodynamics and diffusion mechanics dictate that an advancing planar front is inherently unstable.
Inherently unstable.
Yeah, and that instability is really the engine driving the entire physical architecture of our world.
Okay, so we can visualize this instability perfectly with that window frost example Padacia mentions.
Oh, the Harbin Institute example.
Right. The text highlights images taken at the Harbin Institute of Technology, where outside temperatures routinely drop below, like, negative 20 degrees Celsius.
Super cold.
Yeah. So when the warm moisture of a room hits that freezing glass, ice nucleates. But the fascinating part isn't the freezing itself, right? It's the environment immediately surrounding that microscopic ice crystal.
The environment completely shifts because as that initial seed of ice grows, it rapidly consumes the water molecules directly adjacent to it.
Like a vacuum.
Sort of, yeah. The area immediately ahead of the crystal becomes a depleted zone. So for the crystal to continue growing, new water vapor must cross that depleted gap through diffusion.
Meaning the water molecules have to travel from the moisture-rich air further away, across the dry zone, to reach the solid interface.
Right.
So the crystal is basically sitting in a localized desert of its own making.
That's a great way to put it.
If we imagine a tiny microscopic imperfection on that flat face of ice, like a bump that advances just a fraction of a millimeter further into that depleted zone,
the geometry of the whole system changes.
Because that bump now has a shorter diffusion distance to the incoming moisture.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Because the physical distance is shorter, the concentration gradient is steeper. So the water molecules reach that specific projecting bump faster than they reach the flat areas beside it.
Meaning the bump accelerates.
Yes. It pulls in more mass, which causes it to project even further forward, which in turn steepens the gradient even more.
A total feedback loop.
It creates a feedback loop known as a branching instability.
Okay, think about it like standing in a crowded, disorganized room waiting for a buffet line to open. You accidentally take one step closer to the food tables than the people next to you.
I like this analogy.
Because your travel distance is shorter, you reach the tray first, you grab more food, you take up more space, and you effectively physically block the people behind you from accessing the resources.
You've become a primary branch.
Exactly.
And that is the exact mechanical reality of 3D snowflake forming as water molecules diffuse through the atmosphere. The projecting point starves its immediate neighbors of resources.
But applying this to the heavy industrial freezing of liquid metals introduces a whole new layer of complexity.
It does, because in a super-cooled liquid metal melt, the advancing solid isn't just pulling material in, it is actively rejecting things.
Right.
As the solid lattice forms, it pushes out latent heat, and it rejects dissolved alloying elements, the solute, into the liquid ahead of it.
Which means you have a localized buildup of heat and solute right in front of the advancing boundary. The solid is pushing this highly unstable wave ahead of itself.
And this unstable thermal and chemical wave basically guarantees that the flat interface will break down into dendrites, which is a term derived from the Greek word for tree.
Microscopic metallic trees.
Yeah. But they don't grow randomly. In cubic metals, the atomic lattice is structured so that atoms stack most efficiently along specific 90-degree axes.
These crystallographic paths of least resistance.
Generally known in the 100 directions.
The text highlights some really striking visuals of this, specifically dendrites of zinc that Professor Paul Howell managed to rescue from a partially solidified impure melt.
Oh, those images are incredible. You can see the distinct geometric branches completely frozen in mid-growth.
But wait, if a metal crystal prefers to grow in one very specific, fast direction, like a straight line, how does it end up looking like a bushy tree with branches going everywhere? Where does the lateral branching come from?
It's a great question. The secondary branching emerges because the constitutional instability we just discussed applies to all points along the growth front, not just the leading tip.
I'll see.
As that main primary trunk shoots rapidly forward down the 100 axis, it leaves flat sidewalls behind it.
And those sidewalls are still in direct contact with the supercooled solute rich liquid.
Exactly. The sides of the spear are experiencing the exact same localized desert and resource gradient as the tip.
So the interface along the sides inevitably breaks down too.
Tiny bumps form on the lateral walls. And because the internal atomic lattice still demands that growth happens along those 100 axes, those side bumps shoot out horizontally at perfect right angles to the main trunk.
Becoming secondary branches.
Right. Then the sides of those secondary branches become unstable, creating tertiary branches. So within milliseconds, a primary needle erupts into a vast three-dimensional microscopic forest.
And the specific shape of that forest dictates the physical limits of the industrial machinery we rely on.
It absolutely does.
Padeshi's text contrasts two highly engineered materials, where the shape of these dendrites determines their wear resistance.
The first one is a hard-facing alloy.
Right, the kind of heavily alloyed steel applied to the teeth of earth-moving equipment, farm machinery, and rock crushers.
It's an intricate mix. Iron, 34% chromium, 5% niobium, and 4.5% carbon by weight.
Okay, so a very specific recipe.
Yeah, and in that specific alloy, the very first structures to precipitate out of the liquid are niobium carbide dendrites.
And the researchers took samples of this alloy and applied an acid etch to it, right?
Yes, a selective acid etch to dissolve away the surrounding iron-rich matrix. It leaves only the primary niobium carbide framework.
And the images are wild. The dendrites are highly geometric. They're fiercely faceted.
They look like microscopic arrays of sharpened daggers.
The visual is so stark. Just sharp, faceted, geometric daggers inside the rock crusher. But the shape isn't just an aesthetic feature. It's a thermodynamic consequence of anisotropy. Can you explain that?
Sure. Anisotropy in this context refers to the fact that the solid-liquid interfacial energy, basically the thermodynamic cost of maintaining a boundary between the solid lattice and the liquid melt, varies depending on the physical orientation of the crystal face.
Okay, so niobium carbide has highly anisotropic interfacial energy.
Exactly. So to minimize the overall energy of the system, the crystal refuses to form curves. It locks into the lowest energy crystallographic planes,
creating those rigid geometric facets as it races down the 100 growth direction.
Flat on.
So contrast those jagged daggers with stellite. Stellite is a much more expensive cobalt-based alloy used in severe wear environments.
And its microstructure is so fine that characterizing it actually requires a transmission electron microscope.
Right. The stellate dendrites sit locked inside a hard eutectic mixture.
Which is a secondary phase where the remaining liquid suddenly freezes into an interlocked structure of carbides and matrix.
But when you isolate the primary stellate dendrites within that eutectic, they look entirely different. They are smooth. They are totally blobby.
Blobby is the perfect word. They have rounded secondary arms, completely lacking the sharp, knife-like edges of the rock crusher alloy.
And the absence of those sharp edges is purely due to the interface energy lacking that severe anisotropy.
Right. The cobalt-based system doesn't incur a massive thermodynamic penalty for curving its boundaries.
So the branching structures naturally adopt a smoother, more bulbous geometry while still propagating along the 100 axis.
It really demonstrates how microscopic variations in interfacial energy scale up to determine whether an industrial drill bit shatters granite or snaps in half.
That is incredible.
However, it is crucial to recognize that this intricate dendritic branching isn't always advantageous.
No.
No. Because in heavy manufacturing, the dense, interwoven arms of a dendrite can become the very mechanism of materials failure.
Ah, because the forest creates traps.
Exactly.
We noted earlier that an advancing solid rejects solute into the liquid ahead of it.
Mm.
As the primary and secondary dendrite arms grow side by side, they form these narrow microscopic channels.
And the highly concentrated solute-rich liquid gets pushed into these tight spaces between the branches.
And that liquid eventually solidifies last.
So you end up with a solid block of metal that is structurally whole, but chemically segregated.
You have relatively pure dendrite cores, surrounded by highly alloyed, solute-rich interdendritic regions.
Right. And when this chemically segregated cast steel is subsequently processed, like being passed through heavy mechanical rollers to create sheet metal, those microscopic pockets of high solute concentration get mechanically deformed.
They stretch out into continuous macroscopic layers. It's basically like trying to knead and roll out pastry dough, right? But you've accidentally trapped hard clumps of butter inside the dough.
Yeah.
When you hit it with a rolling pin, you get these inconsistent, weak streaks in the dough that will cause the pastry to fail.
In metallurgy, this creates what we call a banded microstructure.
A banded microstructure.
Yeah. The text explains that upon further cooling in steel, the regular solute depleted regions transform into a phase called bainite. Oh. However, those stretched, highly concentrated solute bands transform into martensite. And martensite is incredibly hard, but notoriously brittle.
So the rolling process has inadvertently manufactured alternating layers of ductile steel and highly brittle glass-like steel.
The component is inherently flawed now. The brittle martensitic bands act as massive stress concentrators.
So if a lateral force is applied to that steel plate, the brittle layers cannot plastically deform to absorb the energy.
They shear and fracture. It propagates a catastrophic crack right along the banded fault line.
Wow. So the magnificent dendritic trees that initially formed the metal ultimately sowed the seeds of its mechanical failure.
Exactly.
So we've established a clear sequence here. A hot liquid freezing into a solid creates dendrites. But nature always has exceptions. What happens when it goes backwards?
The physics of interfacial instability can actually run in reverse, creating something the text calls negative dendrite.
Negative dendrite.
Yeah, they are a completely counterintuitive, beautiful phenomenon. If you take a solid block of ice and introduce specific internal thermal conditions, you can induce melting from the inside out.
Wait, so instead of a solid front advancing into a liquid?
You have a liquid phase nucleating and advancing outward into the solid ice lattice.
The interface experiences the exact same thermal and constitutional instabilities, but the phases are swapped. You get microscopic branching trees of liquid water growing outward inside the frozen block.
And there is a fascinating mechanical side effect to this. Liquid water is denser than solid ice.
Right.
So when the solid lattice collapses into the liquid dendrite, the volume decreases. This volumetric shrinkage creates a localized internal vacuum.
Oh, wow.
Consequently, a tiny microscopic vapor bubble forms inside the main trunk of every single negative liquid dendrite to account for the pressure drop.
Seeing liquid branches tunnel through solid ice is wild, but the concept of dendrites forming without any liquid phase present at all, that is staggering.
It really is.
Hold on. You just spent this whole deep dive explaining how dendrites are the boundary of a liquid freezing into a solid. How on earth can a dendrite form inside a piece of glass that is already solid?
It sounds impossible, right? But Hodysia details an amorphous metallic glass. It's an alloy of iron 82, silicon 4, and boron 14.
Okay, an amorphous solid, so it has no crystalline lattice. It's kinetically frozen in a disorganized, jumbled state.
Right. Researchers at the University of Wollongong took this disorganized solid glass and subjected it to an annealing process. They held it at 433 degrees Celsius for 60 minutes.
Okay.
At that elevated temperature, the atoms gained enough thermal energy to become mobile within the solid matrix. They began to physically rearrange themselves, diffusing through the solid state to nucleate a highly organized crystalline alpha iron silicon phase.
But the interface of that newly organizing crystal moving through the solid glass experienced the exact same branching instability as a solid moving through a liquid melt.
Exactly. Over the course of an hour, perfect, heavily branched dendrites grew entirely within the solid block. No melting occurred.
It was purely solid state diffusion creating crystalline forests out of an amorphous matrix.
The consistency of the underlying physics across vastly different mediums from atmospheric vapor to solid state metals is just remarkable.
Having explored all these strange ways interfaces become unstable and branch, we have to turn to human ingenuity. Because scientists have weaponized this instability to solve a major engineering problem.
Diffusion bonding.
Yes. Some materials, like certain highly engineered aluminum matrix composites, simply cannot be welded normally.
The massive thermal input of a traditional welding arc would just obliterate their tailored mechanical properties.
Right. So engineers use solid state diffusion bonding. They join these components while they remain in the solid state, pressing them together at elevated temperatures well below their melting point.
But the challenge with diffusion bonding is the boundary itself. If you meticulously polish two pieces of metal and press them together, that perfectly planar bond line acts as a continuous macroscopic flaw.
Perfectly flat line is weak.
Yeah, it traps surface oxides and microscopic impurities, preventing the opposing atomic lattices from intimately interlocking. The bond remains weak and prone to peeling.
And the irony here is amazing. Engineers usually spend their entire careers trying to make surfaces perfectly smooth and flat. But Shirzadeh and Wallach at the University of Cambridge realize that the pursuit of flatness was actually causing the failures.
To eliminate the planar weakness, they actively forced the boundary to break down.
How?
They applied a precise, localized temperature gradient directly across the bond line. By artificially manipulating the thermal field, they deliberately induced the very constitutional instability we've been discussing.
So the initially flat planar boundary was forced to morph into a highly chaotic, three-dimensional sinusoidal or cellular surface.
They forced the solid interface to ripple and branch at the microscopic level.
That wavy, chaotic, interlocking surface physically broke up the continuous oxide layers.
And dramatically increased the surface area of the bond, which massively multiplied the mechanical strength of the joint.
Forcing the metal to be chaotic and wavy is exactly what saves it. That brilliant solution earned them a UK patent, the Grand John Prize, and the Cook Ablett Award.
It highlights a broader shift in material science, really. We no longer rely solely on post-mortem analysis cutting metal open after it fails to see what went wrong.
Right.
The reason researchers can manipulate these microscopic structures is because we can finally see them happening in real time through advanced computer simulations.
Like using cellular automata and finite difference methods, where simple rules compute very complex patterns.
Exactly. And Hadesia points to the profound impact of phase field modeling as well.
Phase field modeling specifically solves a massive mathematical headache. If you try to calculate the thermodynamics of an advancing solid using a mathematically perfect, infinitely thin line between the solid and the liquid, the equations become incredibly complex to solve.
So phase field modeling abandons the sharp boundary entirely. It introduces a continuous transition layer of finite thickness.
The boundary itself becomes a field variable that changes smoothly from the liquid phase to the solid phase.
This allows the computer to dynamically calculate complex eutectic solidifications, like in aluminum-silicon systems. It shows how the spacing between alternating solid phases spontaneously adjusts itself based on the tiny diffusion distances ahead of the front.
And these simulations allow us to watch the thermodynamics of a process called coarsening in real time.
Right. When a dendrite first shoots out its secondary branches, they grow rapidly and are spaced very close together.
But thermodynamics demands that a system constantly seek to lower its total energy.
A high concentration of fine microscopic branches possesses an enormous amount of surface area. And surface area equates to high interfacial energy.
So to reduce that energy burden, the system begins to cannibalize itself.
It does. The smaller, highly curved secondary arms actually dissolve back into the interdendritic liquid.
Their mass diffuses through the melt to feed the larger, coarser, adjacent branches. It's brutal. The thicker branches literally eat or absorb their smaller neighbors just to keep growing.
This microscopic cannibalism has direct macroscopic consequences. The final secondary dendrite arm spacing, which is determined entirely by how much coarsening occurs before the metal fully freezes, scales directly with the ultimate tensile strength of the cast metal.
Wow.
It dictates the physical limits of the aluminum engine block in a car or the landing gear of an aircraft.
And changing the parameters drastically changes the shape.
Hmm?
In a simulation of an iron 0.11 weight percent carbon alloy subjected to a staggering temperature gradient of 300 Kelvin per millimeter, the conventional ordered tree structure completely breaks down.
The intense thermal driving force overwhelms the crystal's preferred 100 growth directions,
resulting in a disorganized, highly chaotic seaweed structure.
The environment completely overwrites the crystal's internal geometry.
We have covered a massive amount of ground today. We began by looking at the moisture depletion zones, creating delicate frost on a window.
We explored the thermodynamic anisotropy that forces niobium into jagged daggers and the lack of it that makes stellite smooth.
We analyzed how trapped solute creates catastrophic martensitic fault lines in rolled steel, how solid-state diffusion grows crystalline forests in metallic glass, and how engineers weaponized planar instability to bond unweldable aerospace alloys.
Every single piece of engineered metal we interact with contains the fossilized record of these branching interfaces.
The physical properties of our built environment are entirely dictated by how those microscopic forests grew, clashed, and coarsened in the final fractions of a second before freezing. It totally recontextualizes how we look at the materials around us.
Completely.
And I want to leave you with one final thought drawn directly from a phase field simulation of delta ferrite solidifying in an iron 0.15 weight percent carbon alloy.
Right.
In this scenario, dendrites nucleate with random orientations relative to a strong unidirectional temperature gradient.
And the dendrite trunks that randomly happen to have their perfectly aligned 100 fast growth axis pointing along the thermal gradient shoot forward rapidly.
Their alignment allows them to outpace their neighbors. They outpace them, and then they expand laterally.
The perfectly aligned branches physically swell outward, suffocating the poorly oriented dendrites beside them.
The misaligned branches are cut off from the solute field, starved of space, and effectively choked to death by the advancing front of the aligned crystals.
It's ruthless.
It is. Even in the freezing of cold, dead metal, there is a literal, microscopic Darwinian survival of the fittest happening in milliseconds. It's evolution playing out not in biology, but in pure, unyielding geometry. The next time you see frost branching across winter glass, remember the violence of that invisible race.